Welcome to Ask Lynn, everyone. And this morning I have Cliff. He's actually calling in from Belgium. So if you can give us a couple seconds as he gathers his thoughts, that would be great because my Skype capabilities aren't working. And I know that Cliff wants to do this interview, but at the same time, he prefers Skype. So this is our next best option, you guys. So if you can give us a couple minutes as Cliff gathers his thoughts so there's no delays, that would be great. And I'm going to let Mr. Cliff take it away.
Okay. Good morning over there. Good afternoon here. How are you?
I am perfectly fine. And so you bring clarity into companies. I did take a look at your website, Cliff. So please explain more of what you do.
Well, work-wise, what I do in two words, I would call myself, or actually one word, I would call myself an interculturalist. And usually when I say that to people, they frown and they look at me like, what is that? What does an interculturalist do? Well, what I do in real practice is that I talk to people who experience cultural differences. And cultural differences, for example, cultural differences between, say, Americans and Chinese, or Indians and Germans, or South Africans and Australians. Most of the time when people are working internationally, they tend to forget that there are cultural differences, or they think they know it, but they don't really know how to deal with that. And most of the time, they eventually, when they're in the process of working with people from different cultures, they bump their nose, and then they get in touch with me, and they ask me, like, what is this thing called culture? Can you explain this a little bit more? Because what we're trying to do is not really working. And then what I do is I come in and I have an intake, of course. And I either do one-on-one coaching or seminars in terms of workshops, like one or two or even longer day workshops, or short lectures as well. If people are looking for a speaker on the topic of culture and cultural differences, or working internationally, or cultural diversity, as I think you would address it in the U.S., then that's something I also do. And any of these talks, they vary between, say, half an hour to 2 hours. That will be a short talk. And then it runs more into a workshop.
So, okay. I have the perfect example of a cultural difference where I stuck my foot in my own mouth, and I work at a private school, and part of our private schools were a member of the Sister Cities program. So when the Sister Cities showed up, they didn't know what to do with a person with cerebral palsy, and later on in class of third grade kids. So I asked the teacher leading the group from Japan, the cultural interpreter, why are these kids wearing masks? Because I thought it was rude, obviously, to wear a mask in the classroom. Well, it turns out someone in that group had the flu, so their culture, they thought it was nice not to spread the flu. As soon as I found that out, I backed myself right up and said, oops, I'm sorry. So with these cultural differences, how do we not stick our foot in our mouth when we have people from Japan coming to see a classroom or coming to see our office building? How do we respect different cultures?
That's a good question. And I wonder if there's one answer to this. I think there are a couple of angles to look at this. First of all, it's how you just mentioned this and calling it cultural differences. That's what we call it. But usually how we deal with it is in terms of cultural right or wrong. Like, I'm right and you're wrong. So in other words, if you come up with the example of the Japanese wearing mouth mask or face mask, then we look at that and we think, well, that's ridiculous, that's wrong, that's unnecessary. It's not what they think, because otherwise they wouldn't do it, evidently. So it's a way to actually think about this, but like I said, we tend to judge really fast, is question yourself, now, why would they do this? There's obviously a reason. I don't understand that reason, so there must be a reason that I don't understand. And another way of looking at it is that if say a company asks me to explain the differences between Germans and Indians or Germans and Brits, for example, then what I tend to do is not so much explain how these Brits work, but much more explain how these Germans work. So in your example, I would explain to you how Americans work versus how Japanese work, much more focusing on you than on them. Why? Because then it gives you the tools and the wake-up call or the reality check that you look at them with a certain mindset or frame of mind, which colors and hence interprets what you see. So, and then you get this value adjustment that we tend to do often. And if I can explain to you why you look at them at a certain way and then sort of in a minimalistic way explain why they do what they do, then all of a sudden this why question becomes a what. You can live with a what if you know the why. So the why is then explained, if that makes any sense.
That makes complete sense. People can live with what. They just can't live with why. And I know in different cultures, it's doing business is completely different than here in the U.S. And I bring this up because today we're celebrating a holiday in the U.S. called Labor Day. And I bring this up because I'm going back to work after Labor Day. Joys of going back to work after Labor Day. But a lot of schools all across the nation are going back to work, back to school and back to work before Labor Day. I am in a lucky situation that I get to go back to school and back to work after Labor Day. My school program starts after Labor Day, and so does my work program. But do you think that my international listeners would understand the culture of Labor Day, or is it just a U.S. thing?
Well, what you're mentioning there in terms of you mentioned two things at this point of the of our conversation. First of all, you mentioned the Japanese and their mouth or face masks. And then a tradition, if you want, or a holiday, which is called Labor Day. And what both things that you're addressing are typically on the outside of culture. So if, for example, if all these Japanese would get rid of their face masks, we wouldn't be judging them on that. If you would do away with Labor Day and just make it a public holiday or just get rid of the whole day, it doesn't affect much. So what I'm trying to say with that is when you address these outside layers of culture, an example of outlier layers of culture are is architecture, buildings, for instance. Look at churches or religious building, or look at dress code, clothing. The way we dress here in the West is somewhat different than how they dress normally also in a country like India and even like Japan as well. So it doesn't go that deep. So in other words, if I'm in a meeting and the meeting is very informal and I come in a three-piece suit, I can actually easily dress down by taking off my jacket, rolling up my sleeves, taking off my tie, and I'm much more in tune with the other side, if that makes sense. Now, it goes a lot deeper when you're talking about real rituals. What's a real Japanese ritual? The one I think that everybody can relate to is karaoke. Understanding why that is explains you why that is so important for the Japanese. A concept that typically your American listeners will relate to is this concept of freedom in the United States. It's even in the Constitution. In the U.S. you have these license plates that have a subtitle, right? New York is the Empire State, New Jersey is the Garden State. Do you know what the subtitle is, or the tagline, the subtitle of the state of New Hampshire?
No.
Okay, it's typically, for me, it's very American. The tagline or the subtitle on license plates from New Hampshire is "Live Free or Die." There's nothing in between. It's freedom or death. And to non-Americans, which is, well, the rest of the world, that sounds like a very extreme approach to the concept of freedom. So, you know, those are cultural differences, and they go a lot deeper. If you take away this concept of freedom in the U.S., well, that goes against the grain. If you take away the concept of karaoke in Japan, that goes against their grain.
I see where you're getting at. And now, Chris, before you move to Belgium, were you in the U.S.?
I've lived a year in the U.S., but when I was a lot younger, when I was 13.
And what made you move to Belgium, if you don't mind me asking?
No, that's a perfectly legit question. I had a job opportunity. I was working in the Netherlands, and we're neighboring countries. The Netherlands and Belgium are neighboring countries. Belgium is at the south, or underneath the Netherlands, if you want. And I had a job opportunity to move there, which is a long time ago. I think it's about 10 plus years ago, about 12 years ago or something. So I took that, and so work actually brought me in the country, and I stuck around. So that's the reason I'm still here.
That's the reason why you're still here. And I hate to bring up political stuff on Labor Day, but Chris, you have a better political outlook than we do. We in the U.S. are living in a political hellhole, basically, and I'll say that my way because you guys know how I feel about a certain person who's in the big White House, and and so basically the Belgium's looking at us like, you guys are nuts, and Chris is looking at us like, you guys need to get your act together, and a lot of outside countries are looking at the U.S. like, you guys need to get your act together, and I don't know I know you worked for IBM at one point because it's probably stamped on your website, but was that culture shock to, was that a culture shock to them working with you, or did you teach IBM?
Sorry, you have to go back because the connection got disconnected and I had to dial in again. So you have to start back from where I moved to Belgium and the answer there too.
So I want Chris to say that he moved. I want Chris to answer this question, you guys. Why did you move to Belgium, and then why did you start working for IBM?
Why did I start looking for IBM?
Working for IBM.
I have never worked for IBM.
Well, it says that on your website, you worked for IBM.
Well, I am an independent consultant, and I have clients, and one of them is IBM, but I have many clients. So I don't work. I'm not on the payroll for those companies.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was trying to figure out. You are an independent consultant. So basically, companies come to you basically due to they have culture questions for you. And so basically, if there was one thing you wanted to tell my audience about working with different cultures, what would that be?
Oh, one thing only. That's a tough one, but maybe this might work. I think we all have stereotypes of each other. That's often a way that I introduce the word culture. And a couple of examples for stereotypes. If you think about the Dutch, my own home country, you might come up with something like tulips or the color orange or bikes or something like that. If you think about the Americans in terms of stereotypes, then you might think about hamburgers, the Pledge of Allegiance, all that kind of standard stuff. Think about Germans, about their rigidity to time or their likability of punctuality, for instance. I think what makes good sense to realize, if you ever are dealing with a culture that you don't know, or you're still dealing with a culture that you think you know, and you are judging or evaluating a culture based on the stereotypes that you hold of them, and mind you, everybody has stereotypes about everybody, so it goes back and forth. So my piece of advice would be, think a little bit further than just only looking at stereotypes. Although stereotypes are often true or tell part of the truth, they're not always true. And like I said earlier, we tend to judge cultures more often than we actually like them and appreciate them.
Well, that's wonderful advice, Chris, that we tend to judge the culture book by its cover more than we appreciate different cultures. And God knows I have stuck my foot in my mouth, but I try not to do that, and I try not to do that on this podcast, but I occasionally stick my foot in my mouth about cultures, because I come from a diverse background, and, well, number one, I'm 100% Irish, which I don't tell people that, because Irish have the stigma of their own, and also it comes from the diverse culture of having cerebral palsy, too, so and people know that, like, there's no tomorrow. So, Chris, do you have any questions for me as we wrap up this interview?
You said you have an Irish background originally?
I do.
Were you born there, or are your parents Irish, or how much are you Irish?
I am 100% Irish. I wasn't born there, but my family immigrated to Canada and to the U.S.
Okay. And in terms of you mentioning you being 100% Irish, how would you define, or give me some differences between the Irish and the North Americans, or maybe Americans?
Well, the Irish, which I think this is where I get my strong will, the Irish, because I came from the potato famine, the Irish have a very strong will, which I think, because I'm 100% Irish, I have the very strong will. And this is the first time I've mentioned this on the podcast, speaking of culture. So St. Patrick's Day is less about drinking than it is about celebrating our cultural heritage. And for those of you that want to know my counties, one is Ulster, which is now Glasgow, and the other one is the I can't think of the other one right now, but Ulster is part of my culture, so I think them coming from the potato famine, and both my families had to deal with that, both my sides of my families had to deal with it, I think that what makes this very strong.
Okay, that's a good story and background and explanation as well. At this moment, I have no other questions for you, to be honest.
Well, that's a lovely way to end the interview, and I hope you guys enjoyed this cultural experience with Chris. If you guys want to contact Chris, his information will be in the show notes. And Chris, where can people find you, and where can people get a hold of you if they want to learn more from you about culture?
I think the easiest way, as with, I guess, with many of your guests, is straight through my website, which would be culturematters.com, culturematters.com. If you want to shoot me an email straight away, you can do that at chris.smit, which is at culturematters.com, chris.smit. There's no H at the end, so chris.smit at culturematters.com.
Well, I hope you guys get a huge dose of culture in your lives and in your companies. I am a huge fan of diversity. I'm also a huge fan of studying abroad programs. And Chris, one more question for you. Do you ever work with schools?
Yes, I have in the past, and as a matter of fact, I am also a guest lecturer at a hotel school in the Netherlands.
Okay, so you have worked with schools on culture. I was just curious. And now, if people want to work with you internationally, can you work via Skype, or how does that work?
I think it's like sales in a way. Sales is something you don't really teach over the phone, I think, or Skype for that matter. I think talking about culture is something you experience, typically something you emotionally experience and then rationally try to explain. So I think talking about culture and explaining cultural differences typically is a contact sport. What I mean with that is, if, for instance, you have cultural differences and difficulties between Indians and Americans, it makes most sense to have two groups, both groups, simultaneously in one room, because they actually it makes the experience a lot richer, and they can learn from each other. I mean, here and there on the spot, that is a lot richer and goes a lot deeper than doing this simply over Skype. Intake, etc., can be done over Skype. Coaching, individual coaching can be done over Skype, but I have never done, and I've always also rejected, to do lectures over Skype.
Okay, so you're not working with schools internationally. You feel like it is more of a contact sport. And I agree with you. It's more of a contact sport than anything else. You have to immerse yourself in the culture and in the philosophies of that culture. So that's why I highly recommend, if you can find a Sister Cities program, you guys should do that for your kids. Or if you can afford it, send them a semester abroad in their college, because that is a wonderful way to get used to a new culture. Peace. And so travel. That's what Chris and I are recommending, is that travel to get used to the culture is the easiest thing. And I want to thank Cliff for coming on and sharing what he knows about culture. And if you guys want more information, all his information will be in the show notes. And
all right,
I hope
then.
You guys have a fabulous day. And I thank you guys for listening. Bye, you guys.
Are you still there?